History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to do a couple pretty simple things. First of all, think of a few good questions to ask. And second, devote some time to patiently listen as long-buried memories rise to the surface. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in the process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we become inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This coming Thursday, November 11th, will be Veterans Day, that one day a year where our nation pauses to express gratitude to all who have served. I imagine if you're somebody who values this program, you probably thank every veteran you encounter every day. But with Veterans Day coming on Thursday, why not start making a list right now of people that you want to go out of your way to thank for their service to our country? Wherever you're listening today, there will be Veterans Day observances, parades, banquets, assemblies. Get ahead of it. Look it up now so you can participate. And maybe, how about this? Think about the young people in your life who might benefit from participating too. If you're looking for something to watch on Veterans Day, November 11th, the History Channel will be debuting the documentary Hidden Heroes, The Nisei Soldiers of World War II. That's 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific for the time, and take a listen to the trailer.
It's not just a great Japanese-American story, it's a great American story.
Witness the untold bravery of World War II's Nisei soldiers.
Japanese men wanted to serve so badly.
They're the most decorated unit in military history.
And how they fought two battles.
They were fighting the Nazis, but they were also fighting racism of our nation.
They fought for the ideals of American democracy.
Hidden Heroes, The Nisei Soldiers of World War II, Thursday, November 11th at 8 on the History Channel.
Again, that's the trailer for the History Channel documentary Hidden Heroes, The Nisei Soldiers of World War II, debuting the evening of Veterans Day, November 11th at 8 p.m. I've had the privilege of interviewing World War II veterans every week since 2005, but the Go for Broke National Education Center has been doing it quite a bit longer. Their Hanashi Oral History Project began way back in 1998, and some of those memories they've diligently gathered for years are included in this documentary coming out Veterans Day. I'm really looking forward to checking it out. Hope you are too. And quite a few of the veterans they've recorded have also shared their stories here on Hometown Heroes. We've heard from many Americans of Japanese ancestry who fought for the very nation that was holding their families behind barbed wire. You've heard a lot about the Go for Broke soldiers of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team and the 100th Infantry Battalion, but maybe not as much about those Nisei veterans who served in the Military Intelligence Service. Clarence Suzuki is one of them. A favorite photo of his has him standing in front of the B-29 that helped end the war, the Enola Gay, but he was also there for the start of the war as a teenager on his native Oahu.
I was in Honolulu, Hawaii, when the bombs started falling. I was there.
What did that feel like? I mean, because I've talked to guys who were in the service already at that point, and for them, they thought it was drills, it was maneuvers. They weren't that surprised until they saw the rising sun on the side of those Japanese planes. For you, when did you realize that something crazy was going on?
Well, that morning, I was going to Bible training class. The Bible training class was about 9:30, and I was at my friend's house about a block away from the church, and then I heard a big bomb explosion about a block away. This was on the corner of King Street and Macaulay Street, and it was anchored by the Miyamoto department store and maybe around 10 other stores along King Street. So after the blast, we were kind of shook up what's going on. So we ran outside and kind of looked, and there was smoke. Shortly thereafter, the fire department showed up. And then within 5 minutes, the block was on fire. It's spreading through all the stores. It burned the whole place down. But there was the fireman that carried a woman out, and she had her baby with her in her arms, but she was bleeding. And then that was my first exposure to what happened on that day, December 7th. But the firemen told us to go home and just stay there and listen to the radio. So I went home.
Had you had any indication before that that something like this could happen? How big of a shock was it?
Well, in 1940, I think my recollection may not be historically correct, but during the summer of 1941, you know, now and then we were out to Waikiki Beach. Next door was Kuhio Beach. Waikiki was for the tourists. Kuhio Beach was for the locals. But during the summer, maybe twice a week, we'd be out there swimming, and I would notice that the aircraft carriers were out there on the horizon, sometimes three, sometimes none. But my understanding in 1941 summer was the islands were on red alert already. And if you, you know, read about December 7th, there's no acknowledgement that the islands were on red alert. But my recollection is that we were on red alert, namely because in the summer of 1940, Rear Admiral, he was one of the intelligence chiefs in Washington, but he said that Japan might attack Pearl Harbor. But in June of 1941, he says Japan is most likely to attack Pearl Harbor. So that's the kind of historic, you know, background that I have. But most of the media never acknowledged that the islands were on red alert.
Did you know immediately that it was Imperial Japan that had attacked? And did it strike you that this might be tough to be a Japanese-American on that island after the attacks?
Yes. After I saw the explosion and the fire on McCully and King, the firemen told us to go home, stay there. So within a couple of days, the message from the authorities was to stay indoors, don't turn on the lights at night. But it turns out that everybody wondered what happened on the McCully and King fire, explosion and fire. As it turned out, Pearl Harbor anti-aircraft guns were shooting at the planes, and some of the shells did not detonate as they were supposed to up in the air. They came down on the ground and exploded. And the same thing was in the city of Honolulu. My understanding was about 260 civilians were killed by our own artillery fire, the bombs exploding in the city of Honolulu.
In the weeks and the months that followed, what was life like there? And when did you realize that your life might end up changing a little bit?
Well, we just had to stay indoors. The instructions were coming over the radio that you should, you know, dig a bomb shelter, and every home would be supplied with some lumber or whatever to make a bomb shelter. So my father and I, we had to pick and shovel in the front yard to build a bomb shelter. After that, you had to put black cloth over the windows, and you couldn't have any light shining at night. But we managed. We got some black cloth and some low incandescent lamps. We managed to be in a blackout. And then the school said, yeah, we're going to be school coming out. But this was now around February of 1942. So all the kids went back to school. From that point on, I think the military was, you know, getting more and more secure about Japan not attacking and landing in the Hawaiian Islands. In the meantime, the military governor, General Emmons, allowed the University of Hawaii ROTC guys to form the Victory Volunteer Soldiers. And there was another group of Niseis that were already in the U.S. Army. They got booted out. And there was another group in the Territorial Guard. So these three groups formed later on the nucleus of the 100th Infantry Battalion. School started, and we tried to get back to normalcy, but things were not normal. I mean, we didn't have the regular teachers, but we managed to, you know, go through all this period, and I graduated from McKinley High School in 1943. At that time, they were asking for volunteers, and I asked my papa, he said, no, don't go. But the others, they went, like Senator, you know, Dan Inouye. He was a year older than me. I think he was in the university already, but he volunteered. And some of my classmates volunteered also. They became the nucleus of the 442nd. And I met Senator Inouye in Washington. And I told Senator, you know, you were in McCulley and Bingham Track, and I was in McCulley down on Date Street. And he opened his eyes and said, oh, you know, he didn't say anything. I said, no, you know, Dan, you were in the Troop 36, the Boy Scouts of America, and we met at the YMCA once a month. And Dan only smiled and, you know, he didn't say anything. I said, Dan, you know, I also know that some of your, you know, guys in the 442 were my classmates. One was Thomas Jichaku. He was killed in action in Anzio. And Shigeru Kanemoto, he was with Dan earlier, I guess, but I don't know what outfit he was in. Then there's Archie Sokin, my classmate, also Flash Nakagawa. I don't know what happened to these guys, too. Dan only smiled. He never said anything.
So you had been in the same Boy Scout troop with him all these years before, and it sounds like you were just saying that you thought about joining at a time where you would have ended up in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. That's not what your destiny would be in the military. We'll talk about that in a minute. But have you ever wondered how different your life would have been had you ended up with the 442nd?
Yeah, I often wonder about that because, you know, the guys that went in there, they took some heavy, you know, getting killed and everything. I often thought about that too. I said I was fortunate that, in a way, I didn't go to Europe, but instead it's because of my language training that after I took my basic training in Schofield Barracks, they had a Japanese language school established there. Most people didn't know. But this language school, I attended about a month, and then this Navy, Lieutenant J.G. came by, and he was interviewing a lot of the guys that was in the school, and I apparently passed the language test because I was the only guy that he sent me to Tinian. The rest of them went to Okinawa. But it's because of my spoken language proficiency. Before the war, I went to 8th grade in a Japanese language school. It was for at least 1.5 hours after English school. So it was basically 3 o'clock to about 5 o'clock, plus 3 hours on Saturday morning. So I had a good command of the spoken language. But the kanji, the Chinese characters, I wasn't that good at. But the Navy was looking for people that could speak the language. See, we had to, interrogate, interpret.
And I don't want to make a leap here. But as I just think about this in retrospect and know where you did end up, and not that it was a cakewalk what you experienced, but if you didn't have those language skills, if you hadn't been that dedicated in your schoolwork and learning the Japanese language and other situations, then you might have ended up somewhere else. The language skills you had may have ended up saving your life. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's a fair estimate, because if I didn't pass that test, I would have probably gone overseas, maybe back to Italy or someplace. Sometimes being smart, you know, might be helpful.
He would know. It's time for our first break, but just a reminder, that new documentary, Hidden Heroes, debuts on the History Channel on Veterans Day, November 11th at 8 p.m. More of Clarence Suzuki's World War II memories when we come back. And another idea for you as we approach Veterans Day, how about visiting a military museum in your neck of the woods? If you were to go to the city that bills itself as the home of heroes, you might meet a museum docent who just turned 102. We'll hear his story as well when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member.
member.
That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.